Welcome to Primary Care with Jashni. This is a podcast where we look at the things that we see in practice, especially as advanced practitioners, we see every day. And now with summer in full swing across Europe, the parks, everyone's out in the park cleaning out their sheds, going for long walks. And something we are seeing quite a lot, and our speaker will agree with, is ankle sprains. Going over on your ankle, various reasons why we have ankle sprains. And they come in through our doors quite a lot. So today's speaker is Rob Fernandez. I've worked with Rob in urgent care and A&E in the past, long, long years ago. And Rob has gone mainly into sports injuries. And Rob, I will let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got into specializing in sports injuries.
Hi, Jeshni, and thank you for inviting me to this podcast. Wow, well, the journey's been quite long and measurable, really. So I, as you said, quite rightly, we worked in A&E at Charing Cross for a few years, and I've always really been interested in sport. I've always played sport at school, played sport wherever I've gone to. So sport's been a big part of my life, and I developed from an A&E nurse into an emergency nurse practitioner some 20 years ago now, I think.
It's like 100, but
And
yeah.
still, it feels like 100, yeah. Through my journey, I ended up at a private hospital where I met some doctors who were really into elite sports, and they were, doctors of some quite big football clubs and rugby clubs and things like that. And I managed to get on the MSc in sports medicine at UCL, which was my real
Wow.
first full-on introduction into real sports medicine. And I think I don't do it any discredit by saying that I thought I knew a lot when I first did it, and actually when I started the MSc in sports medicine, very quickly realized I don't really know a lot.
Oh,
And
I
that's
know that
after many years of doing
feeling.
it. And I was like, oh my God, I really need to knuckle down here. And I was introduced to a new way of thinking, a new way of analyzing things. And I did my MSc sports project at Fulham Football Club, so I was introduced to how elite sports teams work, and I've done a little bit of work with Premiership Rugby and Saracens as well. So I've had a dip into elite sports, and I've really used a lot of that experience really in my NHS work, where I still do still work as a nurse practitioner. And I've been able to use a lot of that experience really to help my patients, and also pass on the knowledge with Belmat Healthcare Training, really teaching on their course here. So I think we're going to talk about ankle injuries, and you're quite right, we see a lot of them in the summer, and who said sports was good for joint injuries and things like that. But I speak from a lot of experience. I've had a lot of injuries myself, and so really that's where a lot of this interest kind of grew, was how am I doing this myself, and if I'm doing it, if it's working for me, it's work for other people, in a nugget kind of way, and using those nuggets really to try and pass on that information to not just other patients but other practitioners as well.
I mean, we started this, Rob. As you said, you teach on especially our minor injury course, and which is a very practical classroom session. And I think you've got a session coming up in October. And I know you include taping and strapping because that's something that's quite new to us as in A&E and in urgent care. Historically, we would X-ray, we'd say, okay, go home, ice, elevate, slow mobilization. And so that was quite interesting to learn about that. But I'm going to start from the very beginning. And let's look at the basic concepts. What, we talk about sprains and strains. Can you explain the key differences between them and why it's so important that we understand what a sprain is and what is a strain?
Yeah, so taking it really from the basics of what a sprain and strain is. So a sprain is an injury to a ligament, which is this tough connective tissue that connects one bone to another, and it helps to stabilize the joint. So the classic example is an ankle sprain where the ligaments on the outside of the ankle are stretched or they're torn in some way. A strain, on the other hand, involves a muscle or a tendon. Tendons connect muscle to bone. So classic example would be a hamstring strain or a calf strain that typically affects the muscle and the tendon unit. So clinically, patients use the term interchangeably, really. But distinguishing them is important because the mechanism of injury and the rehabilitation approach ex and the expected recovery time and the potential complications can differ significantly. For example, a lateral ankle sprain may require a strong focus on balance and proprioceptive retraining and restoring that joint stability, whereas a hamstring strain rehabilitation program places a greater emphasis on progressive strengthening and particularly eccentric muscle loading. So the assessment also helps us identify more serious injuries that can masquerade as simple strains or sprains, such as fractures or tendon ruptures or joint instability or even injuries that require surgical referral.
We see a lot of strains and sprains in urgent care especially, and it's quite simple. Once you get that X-ray and there's no fracture, you think great, nothing broken. But that's actually when the problems begin, because rehab, and if you don't have proper rehab, it means patients will come back to us saying, well, I've injured my ankle, but I still can't walk on it, and it's still not feeling very stable. And this is where I think, what are some of the assessment techniques we can use to be able to better understand, is it a sprain or strain? And especially when we're assessing ankle injuries, so that we can give better advice later. No,
Yeah,
actually,
so
sorry, can I just recap that? Let me start first by saying, how do we determine that this is nothing more serious in the
So
assessment?
I think so the first step is really understanding the mechanism of injury, because it often provides us important clues where was there a twisting injury, whether there's a sudden acceleration, whether there's a direct trauma, did the patient hear or feel a pop? These are really important things that if you don't listen to the patient, you will miss these really important cues.
That is so true.
You then identify those red flags, as you rightly say. So they may indicate more serious injuries. These include an inability to weight bear, or a significant deformity, or marked swelling that's developing immediately after an injury, a loss of function, neurovascular symptoms like numbness, weakness, altered circulation, suspicion of tendon ruptures, suspicion of fractures. You can use tools like Ottawa ankle rules, which can help determine whether you need to have an X-ray or not. Now, importantly, Ottawa ankle rules they don't give you a diagnosis. They just tell you whether, they're quite good at reducing the amount of X-rays that we do in practice, but they don't give you the diagnosis. So just because you may not fit the Ottawa ankle rule doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong with the patient.
Sorry, can I just touch quickly? The Ottawa ankle rules. What circumstances, this is, sort of extra question, is, when a patient has specific conditions that make you think, okay, maybe either their pain threshold is less or higher, so they don't tell you, oh yes, it's tender over my lateral malleolus when you press there. Any conditions from your experience that you found that, okay, they don't satisfy the criteria, but you've decided to X-ray based on your experience. Anything that you could share with us?
Yeah, so peripheral neuropathy, I guess things like that would come into play.
I guess patients with a history of cancer or vitamin deficiencies, they would break more e things more easily.
On people on certain medications, for example, people have got osteoarthritis, things like
Or
that.
steroid users, as using steroids on a long-term basis, even for a respiratory condition. I just hardly thought about that, this, because those are the ones where I found sometimes the patient's got this very swollen ankle and it's very painful, and you think, okay, but they're not clinically tender over the specific spots. So we can, as clinicians, use our discretion and say, based on their history, actually, There's still a suspicion that we need to X-ray.
And people who've got history of brittle bones and things like that, they will always, you'll always have to consider extra things around them, particularly in the elderly, the very young as well, who can get buckle fractures, and they are very easily missed when you think, okay, well, they can move it, they can do these things, they probably don't have a fracture, and actually they've got a buckle in there. So these kind of things, you do need to sometimes think out of the box. You're absolutely right when it comes to Ottawa ankle rules, and it's not, it's good. It's widely used in terms of trying to reduce the amount of X-rays that we do, but we do need to think outside of that box and not use it as a absolute definitive kind of guide as to whether they need an X-ray or not. Very
So
true.
now we've X-rayed and we've excluded a fracture, or our assessment has found actually there's no need for even an X-ray. We're quite clear this is an ankle strain or sprain. So we seem to be shifting more away from the RICE approach in recent years. What is the current evidence suggesting is the best way to manage a patient's, especially those first few days after the injury?
Well, I'm glad you've said that, because this is, I think, one of the things I'd love to get across a little bit more, because you're right. For many years, we taught RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevation. And while some components remain useful, the modern rehabilitation processes and advice has shifted away from more prolonged rest and things like that towards early guided movement and optimal loading. So the framework that's most commonly discussed today, and the mnemonic we use, is peace and love.
Okay, I
All right,
didn't
that's
know
the
that.
easiest way to do it. So it was first published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine around 2019 by a French guy called Jean-François Esculier. And the evidence, the emphasis really was on optimal loading and rehabilitation rather than prolonged rest. And so if we look at peace, we look at peace in the acute phase. So let's go back a little bit. There are three phases of healing. Okay, so we need to understand these. So the first phase is the inflammatory phase, and this usually lasts for somewhere around 3 or 4 days or so. And then we've got the proliferation phase, and this is where, in layman's terms, you get the dead cells that get taken away, you get the new cells that get brought in, and they fix that area. And depending on the nature of the injury, that can take anywhere from a few weeks to several weeks. And then we have the last phase. Actually, the last phase gets forgotten about quite a lot, and this is the
So true.
remodeling phase. Okay, and this is where you get the strength of that area back, and actually that can take several months, even a year, depending on the nature of the injury, to get that strength back of that bone. For example, if you've
It's so
broken a
true
bone,
because
something like
that's
that.
what most patients we miss, or we don't tell them that actually this joint is going to take a long time to get better. So you're not going to have full stability for a good 9 months to a year,
Exactly that. And I think in the society that we live in, the world that we live in today, where everything is very
Quick
quick,
fix.
quick, quick, everyone wants to move quickly. And we need to really give the patient education that you can't, no matter what you do. And I use Beckham as a reference to this. Beckham famously broke his foot just before the World Cup. And he did everything. He bought oxygen tents. He did everything he could to try and get himself into there. And it didn't work. And it didn't work because your body just needs time. It cannot force that as much as you can have
I
all
remember that
the.
time. People were praying over his toes on
Yes.
the paper. But yes.
And I use that analogy a lot, because it's really important that people understand that this needs time. To go back to this, the acute phase, we use peace. And so the mnemonic we use is peace. So it's protection. We reduce the activities that significantly aggravate the symptoms for the first days or two, but we avoid complete immobilization unless it's specifically indicated. We elevate it. So this is one of the things that does kind of stay with us from the RICE. We do elevate, and elevation helps to manage the swelling, and particularly in lower limb injuries. A is we avoid anti-inflammatories. And we avoid this,
Interesting.
interestingly, because the theory behind it is that when we have that swelling phase, we release these cytokines and these chemicals in there that actually start that healing process off. And if
And we don't want to stop that.
we
Yeah.
inhibit that, then we slow that whole process down. So actually, it's more about, and there will be some times where you might use it, but most of the time it's about managing the pain in the first instance. Okay, and we can do that with things other than ibuprofen.
Because historically we've sent home, here's ibuprofen for 3 days, take it, 3 times a day.
Exactly.
So we are not doing that anymore.
Exactly that. Exactly that. So we've done avoid.
See.
Compression. We use compression quite a lot, and we
I
use
thought
that
we
to.
moved away from compression. Remember the
So,
tubic groves that
yeah. So
moved away.
Tubigert doesn't do anything. So we're not really using Tubigert. What I do tend to
Support.
use is more supportive stuff. So actually, I will use an elasticated bandage, and I might make a figure of eight kind of bandage around the ankle just to give that bit more compression around that area. And that tends to work. And then, of course, the last one is education. And this is the important part, is educating the people as to why you're doing it, what to expect over the next few days, over the next few weeks, over the next several weeks. And so they have a bit of a plan as to what to expect over that period of time. The love part of the recovery is the second part, the proliferation phase. Okay. So the first one, L, is load. And so you're gradually reintroducing movement and loading according to the symptoms. O is for optimism, and that's more the psychological factor, that's been shown to be really influential in recovery outcomes.
Which is often underestimated.
Underestimated at all. Yeah, exactly that. V is for vascularization, and so there's some gentle cardiovascular activities which can support healing and maintain fitness. And then you've got E, which is exercise, so progressive strengthening, balance training, sports-specific rehabilitation, which are all essential. So ice can still be useful, but more for pain reduction rather than swelling. Okay,
Yeah,
so
I found
more of the pain.
ice is very good for pain, especially if I've been in the garden a lot and my hands are hurting. Put
Yeah.
the ice packs on there, Oh, that's really useful, actually, because especially the last one that you mentioned is that rehabilitation, which is, telling patients, directing on them on where to go, and where to find resources, and what to exactly do. Because, we say, okay, do this, this, and this. But what is the practical advice that we as clinician can give patients in the first instance, and
Yeah.
what resources could we refer them to?
So one of the things is the first things I tell people to do, and I find that this is the one that people remember. It's the really easy one that you give people to do, which is trying to draw the alphabet in the air with your toes. No one forgets that one. It's an easy one to do, and actually, it takes you through all the ranges of motion.
That's a
So
good
if you
one,
do it from A to Z, it actually takes you through all the ranges of motion. If you keep doing that, you start to get that range of motion back. If you don't have that range of motion, it's difficult to move on to the next phase of startup to load, because that's where you're going to get something else going wrong there, because you can't get that range of motion.
So
So
basically, take their toes and sort of in the air, make A, B, C, D, E,
A,
F,
B,
G.
C, D, capitals, A, big capital B, and trying to get that
Get
ankle
that ankle moving,
range of motion
basically.
doing. Okay. And then you've got things like progressive loading. So you want people to try and walk, okay, and try and walk as normally as possible. And this is where you might use a bit of pain relief, because part of the psychological thing generally, if it hurts, people don't do it,
Yes.
right? So part of the and part of my reason for strapping and taping isn't because it's helping the recovery any better. It's actually reducing the pain. And reduce the pain, you allow people then to have the confidence to start doing those things that you need to do.
It makes it feel a bit more secure. I've watched your session on taping. I know what you cover in our minor injury course. It was really interesting how just taping, one, you feel that sense of security, almost like you've been hugged on the joint. And two, then I think when you feel the joint is being secure, because your big worry is that if I walk, one, it hurts. And secondly, what if it goes out of place? What if my joint slips out of place and it's going to break? Those are the sort of comments I've had from patients. So that's really a good point. Tell me a little bit more about the taping and strapping.
So Kinesio tape has actually been around for quite a long time, probably from the 1970s, really. And it was developed by this Japanese osteopath who found that the Western way of taping was quite restrictive to the movement of the joint. And so he's very cleverly developed this stretchy tape that mimics the stretch of skin. But for many years, actually, although it was around, people didn't know about it. And him and his team did a very clever marketing thing, which was during the Beijing Games, Olympic Games, during the UK, British Olympic Games. They basically gave it out to all the athletes for free. They literally went there and
Clever.
went, "Have it. We've got
Yeah.
these tents. We'll teach you how to do it. We'll strap your ankles, your shoulders, whatever it is that's hurting, because every athlete has a niggle here and there, and they just want to have that niggle out of their mind. That's part of the psychological aspect of."
Very clever. Yeah.
So they literally said, "We will do it." And for example, beach volleyball, where they've hardly got any clothes on, you saw these beautiful bodies with all these fantastic colored tape on them. Everybody looked at it going, "What is that?" And that was the moment everyone went, let's go and investigate that more.
I
And the
do
more
like
they
the colors.
investigated it, the colors are nice. They don't do anything in particular, but they look great. And so that's really how Kinesio tape came more to the forefront. And now, it's used by a lot of elite athletes for a lot of things. And I use it a lot. I have lots of injuries here and there. And the reality is that you just want to not think about that whilst you're performing your sport. And by strapping it and by allowing the strapping to support and reduce the pain, you stop thinking about it. You start thinking more about your game and your performance, and that's essentially what elite athletes want to
And
do.
that gets you moving,
And that
basically, which
gets you
is what we
moving.
want them to do.
There are some other there are some things that are the research isn't quite showing that this is the truth, I should say this, which is in terms of inhibiting muscle or engaging muscle a little bit more, or improving performance, or improving circulation and things like that. There have been some trials, for example, on stroke patients to see if it improves their proprioception a little bit more. There's a little bit of data on that. There's a little bit of data on the best bit of data that really comes up is really on back pains and actually reducing the amount of back pain when you strap a back. And so
Okay.
what the research does seem to show is that it reduces pain rather than anything else of in terms of muscles. And so that's why I particularly use it. I use it more to reduce pain and to allow people then to start doing their things as usual rather than using it for anything else.
I think when you have an unstable ankle, that's the thing you worry about is one that it's going to move out of joint, which we know it physically can't, just from walking, basic walking. And two, I remember when you did the session and you were taping everyone and someone taped my leg, and it does feel more secure, which makes you feel, better to walk. And I agree, pain is the biggest problem, and it's one of the reasons why patients delay going back to work. So at what point can they go back to work? We can say that, look, at this point you should be able to return to work.
So in relation to ankle stability and ankle joints, what we have to be really, really careful about, and this is what I want the listeners to understand, about 30 to 40% of your ankle injuries will become unstable if you don't rehab them properly. And you will get them again coming back to you, and you might get your patient saying, "I've got weak ankles." It's not you've got weak ankles, you haven't rehabbed them properly. That's the
Yeah,
ultimate.
exactly.
That's what you haven't done. And so it's important that they understand that they have to do things like heel raises, like wobble boards, or standing on a pillow. Get a pillow on that. So I get people to do these exercises, which is just stand on one leg, eyes open, try and balance yourself. When you can do that, try and do it with your eyes shut. Now you have to rely on that proprioceptive message going up to your brain. Okay. And once you can do that, make an unstable surface. So put a pillow on the floor, stand on the pillow, close your eyes, and try and balance. And what you will find is you start to lean off to one side, and you have to correct yourself by engaging these muscles to move you back into the center. And these exercises are really good for trying to strengthen those medial and lateral muscles to try and stop your ankle rolling over, because what you will find soon after spraining your ankle is that it's actually quite easy to do it again. And that's because that proprioceptive message isn't there. It's a bit like your computer crashing
It's
in a way.
disengagement in a way.
So it's really important to retrain that. And once you retrain that, it's important to start strengthening. So you can use things like wobble boards. You can use things like resistance bands, which are really good at trying to not putting any pressure on the joint, but you're just using those muscles to try and pull and engage those muscles, try and strengthen them a little bit more.
Put
If
them under
you
your
can,
foot and sort of pull towards your
attach them
dorsiflex
to the
and
bottom of
quadriceps.
a chair or a table on one end. The other end is hooked around your foot, and you can either use them in different directions. So you can pull them up, you can push them down, you can turn it inwards, you can turn it outwards. They're really good. They're simple, they're cheap, they're easy to get, and you can get anything on Amazon nowadays. So,
That is true.
you can just get
This
them,
is not a
use
plug for
them.
Amazon, but it
This is
is pretty
not, no.
easy. So,
But yeah, it's important. What I'm trying to get at is, particularly for the clinicians, it's not a case of your ankle X-ray is okay. You just got a sprain, take some medicines, and you'll be fine in a few days. That doesn't work, and we
no,
have to be
because they come back
really.
then.
They will come back. They will come back to you. Well, I did that, and it's still there. It's still hurting, and I still can't play my sports. Or when I've tried to go back to sports, I'm still getting the pain. And that's because you haven't really given them the information that they need, which is what exercises do I need to do? How long is it going to take? When do I know when to go back to sports? And this is an important thing. It's not just about pain, it's about the functioning. Can I do certain things? Can I go up and down stairs, for example, and I don't have any pain, or I don't feel like I'm going to fall over? Can I walk? Can I put my shoes on properly and I don't have any pain? Right? These simple little things that we don't even think about. And then functionally, you want to step by step. You don't want to go straight into, right, everything's fine now, I've got no pain, I'm going to go straight back into that high level sport that I was doing.
That was going to be
That
my
doesn't work.
question. Because you know, our sportsmen, they want to get back on the field, and you literally have to
Absolutely.
tie them down in some ways. And they want to know how soon, so at which stage of the healing, or what should they be able to do before they get back on the field as such.
So I always talk about this, and I use a framework that's not too dissimilar to a concussion protocol when you've got concussion and you come back,
Oh,
right? There are
yes, the
stages that you need to go through, and if you're getting some feedback afterwards, so if you're getting swelling and you're getting pain the next day, then you're not quite ready to go back then. Okay, so I get people to do, can you go for a walk and there's no pain? Can you do a light jog and there's no pain? Can you do some agility stuff where you're moving from side to side? Okay, so you get these little star shapes. So you can use some tape, make a star formation in your kitchen or wherever, and you
yeah.
hop from one end. Each star point, you're trying to hop to that point. Is that hurting at any point there? If it's hurting you and you're getting swelling and you're getting that feedback, then think about it. Are you ready to go back? Do you feel comfortable to go back to your sport? If you're doing those things and there's no pain, there's no reaction, there's no swelling, you feel comfortable in yourself, you feel confident now to push it a little bit more. Let's push it a bit more. Can we do some more sports specific stuff? So, for example, if you're a footballer, can I kick the ball and run around something? Can I go do my agility drills with a football? Can I run with a football? Can I pass it? Can I pass and go? No contact yet. Important that there's no contact in there yet, because
So
you get
that's a
that
bit like
contact.
concussion for the
Yeah,
first 21 days.
exactly
No
that. So I
contact in the
use a
first
very
21
similar
days.
kind of process where it's step by step. And that also improves that psychological aspect, because you're trying to retrain that confidence in your body to go back to full sport, full contact, and not worry if someone's going to come, because they don't care that you've just had an ankle injury. They're coming into you, right? So you have to have that confidence to say, I'll take that, I can take that, I can continue.
Because I know in concussion, you know, the general rule is no contact sport for 3 weeks after your concussion. So I think that first 3 weeks, you know, we're going through the different phases of healing, and then we're trying to strengthen it. So we do need to be more careful, which is very hard when somebody wants to get out there, you know, very quickly. So for someone who's listening, was recently sprained an ankle or strained a muscle, what practical advice? And you've sort of given most of it. would you give to optimize recovery, reduce the pain, and lower the risk of re-injury? So just to summarize, what you've said already in a way.
Yeah, so I've kind of highlighted a few points. First is get an accurate diagnosis, okay? Many serious injuries initially look like simple sprains or strains, but if you're unable to bear weight, you've got significant weakness, you know, to the deformity, there are, or their symptoms are worsening rather than improving, then they need to seek treatment. And sometimes you'll get people who just try and push through it a little bit more. Important that they get the right diagnosis. The second one is to keep moving within reason. Okay, so complete rest is rarely the answer. Gentle movement, gradual loading helps to stimulate the healing and prevent stiffness and deconditioning. Third one is don't rush the process. Recovery follows a biological timeline, so it's trying shortcuts of rehabilitation often results in setbacks and current injuries. And chronic instability. The fourth is probably prioritizing rehabilitation.
That
So
is so important. That's the bit that really, I think we really need to get more focused on.
we need to be more focused on it. And this is where the, I guess for my teaching in on the MSc course was, I was actually one, the only nurse amongst orthopedic surgeons and physios, and I
I
learned a
see.
huge amount from them, right? And part of that was also you had a physio aspect to a physio model for them. So how would you rehab them? You've got the diagnosis, you've treated them, how would you rehab them now to get them back into the sports again? This was part of the module that we had to do. So prioritizing that rehab, not just symptom relief, but pain reduction is important, but the long-term recovery depends on restoring strength, mobility, balance, and function.
Because trying to get a physio appointment is not easy on the NHS.
Or
So
GP for that
because
matter, yeah.
they are inundated, and so quite often I see this referred to physio, and I think, have you ever tried getting a physio appointment via your GP?
Yeah.
Plus, you need to get your GP. No, not slagging off GP service, but the service is inundated,
Yeah.
and so that's why I think your points that you made. First, peace and love, and the whole thing of protecting and but. I think a simple thing that patients can do is doing the alphabet. Can they do the alphabet A, B, C, D in capitals before they progress to the next stage? That is a really good point before they start learning more about stability. And then your second points where first you need to do the alphabet so you can lie on your back, legs in the air, twisting your ankle around to try and get the alphabet. Am I correct?
Yeah, you do. You can do that. You can literally do that exercise anywhere, right? You can do it
Sitting,
when you're
standing,
sitting down
yeah.
watching TV. If you're going to work, you can sit down at your desk. You can do it. It's one of those really simple exercises that people think that's just too simple. It can't really do anything for me, but actually, it does a lot more than you give it credit for.
So you start with that, and then the second thing is start by standing on one leg with the
Yeah.
eyes
So we
open,
want
then
you.
eyes
Yeah.
closed.
It's more about moving, right? We want to get you moving. And then we want to start loading as much as possible. So as much as you can do. So can you stand on one leg? If you're standing with your eyes closed and actually you're falling over and you can't keep that, you're probably going to hurt yourself, all right? So we step back a little bit. Keep your eyes open. Just try and balance on that. Can we do 10 seconds? Great. Can we do 20 seconds? Can we do 30 seconds? So, sometimes we can go through those phases a little bit more. I don't really want to sit here going, right, do this, 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 and then you'll be fine in 2 weeks. No, it doesn't really
Yeah,
work,
that's
right?
yeah.
So sometimes we just want to move too quickly. So can you do it in 10-second blocks? Can you do it in 20-second blocks or 30-second blocks? Once you get to about 30 seconds standing on one leg is actually quite a lot, all right? So once you can do that, then can we change it up a little bit? Can we make it a little bit harder for you? Now, can we close your eyes and try and do it 10-second blocks, 20-second blocks, 30-second blocks? And then when you can do that, let's make it a little bit harder now. Let's put an uneven surface on the floor, a pillow or something like that. Stand on that, keep your eyes open first and see if you can balance on that. If that's easy
Is that
enough,
with both legs? One leg. Okay.
one leg, yeah. And then we can progress that. So it's about those stages, not just, it's not a set. There's no set kind of pattern, really, because everybody's individual. So everybody will move through those stages either slower or quicker than the next person. So it's really about how do you do it with that individual? What's good for that individual? Is it I need to just go slowly through this phase, or can I go a little bit quicker?
I remember my trainer once said, instead of trying to do 8 reps, do 4 really good ones. Like example, a sit-up. Instead of trying to do 8 sit-ups and you do it really badly, do 4 really good sit-ups or 4 really good crunches, and do it well and do it properly. And I think that's the thing is to for people to focus on that. We don't need to do multiple. We just need to do good ones. 10 seconds, few times a day, standing 10 seconds on one leg. Just keep doing it. Every hour, maybe 10 seconds, you stand on that leg to try to increase, and then you go try for 20, but doing it in small little
Smallest rather than long ones, right? But the important thing is that balance, for particularly with ankle sprains, the balance exercises are really crucial, because that's what will stop you. If you need to balance, if you think about the things that you do actually on one leg, right? If you take a step, the other leg comes off. So at some point you are balanced on one leg. When you're going up and down the stairs, at some point you're balanced on one leg. If you're moving from side to side, at some point you're balanced on one leg. So those balance exercises are really crucial, particularly for ankle injuries.
Thank you, Rob. That's been really interesting. And we look forward to hopefully having you to discuss more on a few, I thought we'd do a series of podcasts.
Oh, that would be
We'll
nice.
cover
Yes.
different subjects. And I guess if people want some real life experience, they can come to the minor injuries course where we do a lot of practicals and you show everyone how to do taping and give advice. Any final points for our listeners?
So I think that there's three kind of takeaways from this. So the first one will be the mechanism. So listen to your patient, okay? The mechanism will tell you the story. So
So
listen carefully
important, yeah.
before you move into the examination. When you examine someone, and we'll probably go through examination techniques in another podcast, but examine systematically. There's a number of people you just go, it hurts here. You examine just that bit and you miss everything else. Start systematically. So start from the top, working above and below that joint,
Yeah.
and working systematically through
We
it. So
talk about distracting injuries, isn't it?
exactly.
Where someone comes in with a broken hand and what you or a twisted ankle, and you are saying, what made you fall and twist your ankle? Actually, it was dizziness. At the same time, if someone is tender on one spot, you continue examining, is there tenderness and instability in other spots? So that's so true.
And you'll be surprised how many things foot fractures and sometimes even Achilles
Oh, yes,
ruptures
ankle
or
above and below.
these things get missed because you're just looking at where the point. People are good at saying where it hurts, but they're not good at telling you how it happened, right?
Yeah.
And trying to examine how that happened will actually give you more information than actually, doing your examination.
So
And
just
the third.
touching on mechanism, did the foot go in? Did the foot go out? Did you slide forward? So many different mechanisms which we'll explore in another podcast, but that can give us so much more information.
100%, 100%. And the last one, really, so if you're getting 3 points, the last one would be early rehab. So early rehab is the core part of treatment. It's not just an optional extra. And this reduces the amount of chronic ankle stability injuries that you will get to see later on down the line. So if you can rehab them early and properly in the early stages, you'll prevent more chronic stuff happening a little bit later on.
And Rob, I think at the end of the session, you'll probably will add into the show notes for people to read some resources that they can refer to or signpost patients to say, go and read this just to get a bit of advice because there's so much information out there. And it's about directing patients to the right resources to give them information. And that's not Google and ChatGPT.
No, indeed that.
So thank you very much, Rob. That was really interesting. And we look forward to having you on our future sessions and seeing you on the minor injuries course. So thank you to everyone. And if you have any suggestions on other injuries or types of injuries that you would like us to discuss on the podcast, please send that in to jeshni@valmet.co.uk, and I'll put that into our show notes. And if you have any further questions for Rob, please email us as well. So thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.